Thank you for joining Paul Bartlett for Rethink It, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of thinking about leadership and life in a world that is thinking less about church.
Well, welcome to our Rethink It podcast. My very special guest today is Mark Varagis. Mark and his wife Jemima lead, of course, Kingdom City Church, who's not only Australia-wide, but of course, global as well. Mark, thanks for joining me today on my podcast.
Thank you, Paul. It's a privilege and always good to talk to you.
Now, I have heard that you're a big football soccer fan. Now, just to let you know, because I'm not one, I would have called it soccer, but I've been gracious enough to, I've added the football term in. Apparently, you love Manchester United. What made you follow them and what's your passion?
Well, the problem with being a Manchester United fan is you first have to give the disclaimer that you weren't a bandwagon jumper that just jumped on during the successful years, which was when, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, led probably the greatest charge. Now, I grew up in Malaysia as a seven-year-old kid. I was watching the FA Cup final one year, and I think it was the early 80s, Man United was playing a team. And this was the era Liverpool was winning everything.
Yeah,
so
right.
It was hardly bandwagon jumping, but this team played in red jersey and I liked them and they seemed cool. So I jumped on then. And, you know, we lived through a few barren years. And then, of course, when Alex Ferguson got, you know, one of the best leaders in any industry, really, he built a multi-generational successful model of champions. And, so it's the most popular club in the world. And I'm part of the masses.
Part of the mad fan base.
Yeah.
Have you seen them play at Old Trafford, the famous venue?
So I went to Old Trafford. I went to Manchester for the very first time just before the pandemic.
Right.
And there was not a game that weekend. Glenn Barrett, a friend of mine, was kind enough to organize for me a tour around Old Trafford. So I went around, sat in the seats. I've seen the stadium on TV and screens for, you know, 20 years. And to be there, it was surreal. It was a spiritual experience. Right up there with going to Israel.
You had the same spiritual encounter at Old Trafford as you did in Israel. Wow, that's interesting. So do you play soccer yourself?
I used to. And now, whatever involves, you know, anything with a ball, I was quite interested in as a young age, following and playing. So I was pretty active when I was younger. But yeah, now a little bit of squash and a bit of trying to stay fit and healthy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got to do something, haven't you? I don't know. I used to play basketball, of course, and I say used to because I rolled my ankles that many times that I finally had to quit because I was doing it every third game I was playing.
Well, you got the height for that. I would have loved to play basketball. I played a bit, but
yeah,
it would have been far better.
Well, you remember, like, so I'm 6'4", but because I was chaplain for an NBL team, well, when I joined that team, I never forget walking into that the back room, the change room. I've never stood in a room with so many people taller than me.
Yeah.
Right? It was freaky. Yeah.
Wasn't it Illawarra Hawks?
Illawarra Hawks, yeah, still there. We've got Brian Gorgian as our coach.
Storm and Norman Taylor, was that around your era?
Yeah, how do you know that?
I'm an NBL fan. I love basketball. I was from the James Crawford, Tiny Pinder, Leroy Loggins, all of that.
You must be almost as old as me then or something if you can remember all that. That was my era too. I loved
that. Far. Yeah, no, I do remember. I was a kid. I followed it clearly and Illawarra was a good team.
Yeah, it was. And look, we always punch above our weight. We've won one championship and we got the national coach of the Boomers, Brian Gorgian, who coaches us now. And he's a bit of a legend. So that's pretty awesome.
Brian Gorgian coaching them now?
Yeah.
I didn't know
this
that.
This is his second year.
Wow. Yeah, I remember Alan Black coached them and I was a fan from then.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, that goes back. Well, I tell you, so I've resigned from being the chaplain, but one of my pastors here is the new chaplain. And so he's the chaplain to the national coach. That's what I always remind him all the time. He's got a pretty prestigious job there.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Hey, mate, I know that, you know, most people, of course, know you leading Kingdom City, but I'm not sure how many know that you were previously a professional lawyer. And we're talking about rethinking today. So what made you rethink your career path of being a lawyer to becoming a pastor of a church?
I think it wasn't so much that I wanted to switch in careers. So growing up, my family are all professionals. So I wanted to just be a lawyer because I wasn't probably geared for the strengths of law. I didn't really enjoy public speaking, English, reading, comprehension, which is really, you know, sort of bread and butter for that stuff. I was much more of a numbers guy, you know, maths and science. So I should have been an accountant or an engineer. But at a young age, for some reason, I wanted to be a lawyer only because I had four uncles, a lawyer, a doctor, a dentist, and an accountant. And the lawyer seemed to have the most money and the most fun. So it was just this childish thing without any real regard to what was involved. And then one day, our pastor in a church, I was in kids' church, and he sort of looked at me and said, young man, do you want to be a lawyer? I don't know whether it was a prophetic thing or just encouragement, but he had no idea. I went, yes. And so that little sign was what took me, kept me, even though I should have done something else. So I describe myself as a lawyer who really just wanted to do that. In hindsight, I look and I can see how God's used the graces of that profession and the industry for what I'm doing now. However, and I never would have thought going to law school would be better preparation for what I'm doing now than go to Bible school. But it probably was. When I rethought the switch, it wasn't, I actually just joined to serve at a local church. So to be honest, anyone who looked at that would have thought he has not rethought anything because it just looked ridiculous. I went to 1/3 of my salary. I was single, so I didn't need permission. But at the same time, it was a big step of faith. I was 26.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the age where if you're going to go further with your legal career, you had to go all in. And lose your soul on the way in a sense because you've got to sell out to everything. And I just had a nudging sense that God was leading me in the direction of serving in the church. And it was very hard to explain to people because at least if I went as a missionary to Africa or something, it sounds noble. It sounds like, wow, what a brave young man. I'm like, you're doing what? You're just going working for some local church, but church of 150, doing a bit of admin, being a bit of help. Like, it didn't even sound noble. So I guess there was not much thought, although having done that, I had to re-engineer my mortgage and a few other things. But to be honest, I didn't set out to be a career pastor. Yeah. So when I did this, you know, my dad's not a pastor. He's a businessman. So he said to me, I said, any advice? He goes, well, if you're going to be a pastor, be a good one. That's literally all he said to me.
Right.
You know, I thought, okay, well, that's helpful. Sure. So I did it. And I guess my journey was more always wanting to know God, not necessarily work for him.
Yeah.
So the idea of a career path in ministry I didn't even know what that was. Now, looking back in hindsight, seeing 16 years of history and what God's done with Kingdom City, I go, okay, this has clearly become something. And now I've got to, you know, map it out, not just for me, but for all our staff. But it wasn't at the time.
I reckon that's how they trap us in church. I'm a bit like you. I lead the church that I grew up in, essentially. And my attitude, I was a builder, project manager. And my attitude was, I just want to help. So I'm here to help. And, you know, fast forward 10 years and I'm pastoring the church. So I'm thinking, how did that happen? You know, I mean, I did marry the pastor's daughter. That helps, right?
That helps. That helps. Yeah,
that, you know, hang around long enough, marry the pastor's daughter, they give you the church. I think that's how it works. But hey, so you mentioned there's a few things that translated across from your lawyer life to your leading a church life. Are there some specifics that you say when you think about that early training as a lawyer that you say, I absolutely use those skills in ministry today? What would they be?
Yeah, for sure. I think, again, given the context that I hated public speaking, I didn't really enjoy reading and comprehension. All of those things helped me for, you know, a lot of what I do today. I think going to law school didn't help me to become a complete lawyer, but it taught me how to think like one. And so you learn to think analytically, you learn to think strategically, and you learn to see both sides of an argument. And that's not just for conflict resolution and stuff like that. It just helped you to analyze, to think a little bit more clinically. And so even though there was I had a tenderness towards God and I love worship and that side of stuff, I think the analytical, strategic, intentional side of me was absolutely heightened and sharpened. And because I did law and commerce, that was really useful because I learned accounting, balance sheets, you know, all of that stuff, which I had a probably natural inclination to anyway. Yep. As well as reading constitutions and drafting documents and all that.
Right.
You know, back in the early 80s, 90s, it's like, you know, if you love God, love people, plant a church.
Yeah.
Well, that's not planting a church. That's called being a Christian.
Planting
a church or leading something like what you lead or what I lead, you've got to have a CEO's brain. You've got to be a public speaker. You've got to understand enough around so many different areas. And I think law and commerce was a huge part of preparation. I didn't see it. I didn't plan that. But absolutely, it was a crucial part of my development in hindsight.
Actually, it's interesting to say that because like way back when I started leading here at Lighthouse about 20 years ago, I did kind of one of those, you know, tours over to the States to kind of find out the secret sauce to, you know, guys like Matthew Barnett and some of the bigger church guys. And I must admit, what the one lesson, I mean, I learned a lot, but the one lesson I came away with is the guys that are growing significant churches either had a gift of being a visionary but a CEO type, so they had that mix, or they were smart enough to be a visionary but to have somebody very close by that had that CEO mix as well. And to me, I've never forgotten that. It was like that was the one thing to me that stood out. The guys that thought they could grow their church all on vision, they weren't doing it. Right. And then the guys that thought it was all the other, they didn't do it either. They had to have that beautiful combination of the two that I thought, yeah. Hey, Kingdom City has got a really big commitment to the next generation. So what do you think church leaders need to now rethink about how they raise up young people in their churches, either as a result of the last 2 years or just in generally what you're learning? What do we need to rethink for that generation?
Yeah, look, you're 100% right. We're very committed to that. A huge part of that, the credit goes to my wife, Jemima. She actually is not only so passionate, really puts her hand strongly on what we're doing to shape it globally, not just locally. Kids, youth, and I think, look, each generation has its new mindsets and challenges. You know, they label us with different labels and you know, different norms that we're having to adjust to and you know, all the rest. But I think our commitment to it now is so full on, in the sense that it's not just youth programs and kids programs and outreach and all of that. We're actually starting a school, Kingdom City International School, which is a global online educational, because I guess if you think about closing the loop, we've got lots of good churches and lots of good families, but then the child goes to a school and then so many people have lost it on the third leg of that tripod, I guess. And yeah. This is not going to be a solution for everybody, but it certainly gives people an option, because a lot of the countries we're in, the education quality is really low. And then, of course, in other places, it's turning on a dime in terms of some of the, you know, the foundational basis that we are all used to. And yeah. It really is. I almost feel like we've got to start again. We have to start with the, you know, I'm hopeful for every age, and I'm not, you know, picking one over the other. But if we start again with the next generation of kids, and you got to start younger than before. Like I learned about certain things at the age of 15 that my son's learning at 10. And he's exposed to things at 10 that I was exposed to much later in life. So it's genuinely this proactive, intentional engagement. And again, depending on your own context, you got to work out what that looks like. But it's no longer the church of tomorrow. It's the investment that will one day help shape the church and the community of tomorrow.
Yeah, right. That's great. So is there one thing, I know this is an interesting question, but is there one thing that you hope the next generation will do or achieve that you don't see yourself being able to do in this generation, or either because you know, it's not in you or you can't? Is there something you think you hope that they might achieve?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. I think one thing I hope that the next generation achieves is they start to see ministry as any gift God has put in their life. So any aspect of society, because if they can do that, we will bring transformation at a whole nother level, rather than just making it all about, you know, a church or a service or an organization or an event. And that's all massive. And that's maybe easy for me to say, because there's a strong one that I'm involved with, but imagine if every believer genuinely saw themselves as the salt and the light. They saw themselves as the arms and the feet of Christ. They saw themselves as carriers of a reality in the areas of arts and science and media and education and sports and whatever else. I think if we can get the next generation thinking like that, not just organically, but even strategically, we're going to have the kind of impact that maybe the groups that have really taken over the media and the arts and the education 50 years ago. If we can, but you have to start that now. We have to start that. It's a short-term and long-term thing. It's a short-term and long game. You got to play the short game and get involved. You can't just wait for 20 years. Yeah. But at the same time, you've got to do that and then play the long game. And I think if we can build a mindset into the next generation that actually genuinely understands that, they aspire to every strata of society, not just a platform with a mic, because ultimately that's what we're going to need.
Actually, it's interesting to say that because I just interviewed recently Mark McCrindle, you know, Australia's leading social demographer, and at two levels. And I asked him a similar question, but he also said when he grew up and he had a passion for social demography, he said his church wouldn't even validate that as, you know, unless he did something like a pastor, he wasn't going to get validated. So he had to rethink that himself. But he actually, when I asked him, what does he think from a perspective of a social demographer and how we reach Australia and the globe, he said exactly that. He said, we've got to get everyday Christians to see their everyday life as a calling. And that definitely resonates around, you know, sort of everybody that we're talking to, you know, at this point. Mark, I know you've got a passion for Indigenous. I do as well, and I'm working in New South Wales with Indigenous cultures and that sort of stuff. What do you think there? What's the rethink when it comes to Indigenous Australians? But I know you're probably dealing with that even at a global level. What are your thoughts around more we need to do or less we need to do?
Yeah, there's probably far more qualified people than me to speak to that. But I guess the basis from which that is even resident in not only my thinking, but I think even when we started, because our church started actually in Malaysia, and the Indigenous context there are the Malays. Yeah. And there was a big religious and racial tension around, should we allow them in? And that was, and you know, we coined one of our, probably our key basic atmosphere, which was accepting of all people. And that wasn't about the current tensions about, you know, LGBTQ or anything like that. It was literally about, and it started with the Indigenous people of Malaysia being accepted if they wanted to come, because a lot of churches were not allowing them in because of fear of government, fear of a whole bunch of things. And I think maybe because I'm also an immigrant in some ways, I also belong to multiple cultures and not sure where I totally fit. I relate to people feeling isolated, a bit lost, a bit excluded, a bit marginalized. And that's me as an immigrant, never mind if I was the original, you know, landowners of the country. So I don't know that I'm an expert in the area. I guess we've just decided accepting of all people has to be literally genuinely accepting of all people. And anytime you see honor or kindness shown, it's a God thing. It's a genuinely positive thing. And people of all walks of life can feel the value of that. I remember one story that probably marked me in the area of just accepting of all people, whether Indigenous, in whichever culture, globally or locally. I was in Thailand, and I was just by myself, and I went, this must be 20 years ago, I went to a church on a Sunday morning. It was an African church in Thailand. Now, I don't understand Thai or the African dialect there. And it was Africans that were playing loud bongos. It was just, they were having a time of their life. I did not relate to one thing. I sat there, nobody looked like me, nobody sounded like me, nobody talked like me. And I think I'm in the middle of Africa, but I'm in the middle of Thailand. And I remember looking at it at one point thinking, wow, these people are so different. And I think the Holy Spirit just gently nudged me. And I realized something in that moment, that these people were so different, were as much created in the image of God as I am.
Yeah.
So they look at me and go, wow, who's that interesting character out there? But those people, and you know, it sounds so simple to say that, but I think if everybody understood that no matter what culture, what country, what background, what strata of society they come from, every human being has dignity and value because they were all created equally in the image of God as any other human on the planet. That instantly raises the bar. And I know sometimes there's overcorrections to errors of past generations, and I get that. I'm not proposing solutions on all of that. But I think if everyone starts with that as a premise, we'll find that we'll end up reaching Indigenous communities a bit better than we are. We'll reach all sorts of communities better than we are. And more importantly than just a project or a program, we'll actually inculcate a value system that will not create those gaps in the future.
Yeah, right. That's good. Well, Mark, last question today. You, of course, Global Church, traveling a lot. That's very much a part of your life. I mean, I think once you said you didn't stay more than 10 days in one place, you said to me last time we were chatting. And so a lot of travel. That came to a grinding halt because you live in Western Australia and you may never travel again. Talk to me about that for you, though. I'm interested in you because that's like a car hitting a wall almost. What did you have to rethink about you personally, about your leadership, about rest? Tell me about that.
That is a great question. And honestly, the answer is everything. I had to rethink everything. Not, you know, and I love the even concept of rethink, but I think what rethink means is you rethink methodology, you rethink strategy, you rethink, you're not rethinking the basics of your faith, or you're not the unshakable tenets of what makes you who you are.
Of course,
but you had to rethink everything else. Literally anything else had to be rethought. And whether it was, how are we going to do this? I remember the one staff meeting we had. We have about 200 staff members globally between all the countries. We got them all on Zoom. And in one Zoom, we pivoted from 55, you know, weekend services to one, an online service, because the world shut down in the same two-week period. And we had to rethink how we did church. We had to rethink leadership from a distance. See, because I was used to travel, right, and managed it in the context of when I'm present. You know, for example, here's a little thing we learned. You know, I can lead from a distance. I can't really father from a distance. I can't raise my children from another country. Yeah, but at the same time, I can provide leadership with technology and some of the, you know, things that we've got going for us. So what it meant is that fathers had to rise up in the countries that they were in and actually the next generation. So even the strategies around how we raise leaders, the content, easy. You know, the communication, not a problem. Even in some ways, the alignment and the belonging increased because we made extra effort because of the, you know, the benefits.
Yeah.
Of but, you know, when we come out of this, even West Australian people, which we, you know, we,
yeah, 2030, I'm hearing. Yeah.
We might have to wait as longer than anybody in history. But when we do come out of it, you know, people have asked, will we go back to what we did before? I don't think so. I think, see, we've even expanded in the pandemic. We've added new cities. We've started an online campus. Things have happened. So I honestly think we will have to rethink. Maybe my head's not in it right now, but even in the new normal or world or whatever you want to call it, I don't anticipate having the same level of travel. My boys are at a different age of life. Our team is stronger. Maybe we may take teams on more trips rather than me trying to do a solo act around the world. It definitely caused us to rethink everything outside the basics of scripture, literally everything. And even the value around small groups, the value around house to house, where that was the only thing they could do. And not then throwing that out as a pandemic strategy and realizing maybe God wanted us to rebuild the inner core of what was always the key of church, two or three gathering together and two or three agreeing. And then on top of that, celebrating the gatherings, on top of that, celebrating the conferences and all the stuff we get to do as well. So I love it because I'm an R&D fanatic. So I enjoy tinkering and messing around with it. Not at the expense of people's lives, but at the same time, if you didn't, you're probably stuck.
Yeah, that's a good thought. Well, Mark, that's been incredible today. And I love that perspective. And you know, what I'm hearing from everybody is COVID was terrible, but actually it's been a bit of a gift to us in the way that we've had to rethink everything. So thanks again. Hey, everyone who's listening, check out Kingdom City Church, a great church doing amazing things globally, and particularly Mark and Jemima, what they're contributing to Christianity across the world is phenomenal. We're thankful for you, Mark, and your influence in our lives, and really looking forward to hearing more about the great things that are happening there. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you for your time and always great to talk to you. Thanks for including me.
God bless. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Rethink It. For more, visit rethinkit.com.au. That's re-thinkit.com.au. Or follow Paul on Instagram at Paul E. Bartlett.